Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I want to thank Koji for suggesting that we move the chairs so that we could bow directly to the altar. That was a good form. Since we don't usually have chairs up here, I wasn't really sure how we were going to do it. So I just think it was really nice to bow with the two of you, the three of us together. So I want to, actually before I forget, I'm going to need a clock. We usually begin with a land acknowledgement, and I'd like to do something a little bit different today for that. I just want to talk a little bit about, tell a story about me that relates to our land. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So every week, I go for a walk with a friend at Bedote, otherwise known as Fort Snelling, and we walk around Wetutanka, otherwise known as Pike Island. And this is a place that has a very troubled history with regard to our indigenous relatives. So after the U.S. Dakota War of 1862, there were about 1,600 Dakota people who surrendered to the U.S. government and were imprisoned at a concentration camp, basically at the bottom of a hill beneath Fort Snelling, which is right where the trailhead for the walk around Wetutanka is. So every week I go right through this area where these 1,600 people were imprisoned, and many suffered from hunger and other diseases through that winter, and about 300 died. So, and I think people were just buried right there, some. And so it's a graveyard. So every time I walk there, I think of that, and also it's because there's a memorial that's there right across from the visitor center, if you look for it. So every time I walk there, this comes into my mind, and I offer a prayer. The prayer is for the past, but also in the here and now, knowing that our Dakota relatives are still here, and the trauma is still fresh. And it's not only the Dakota relatives who have experienced trauma and harm at Fort Snelling and elsewhere, but many beings. And so those are included, and I remind myself to stay awake and stay alert and do what I can to ease suffering and work for equity. So that's just a suggestion of how we could work with acknowledging the land that we walk on. When I walk there, though, I'm not just sad. I'm also trying to enjoy the freedom on behalf of all who have suffered. My being miserable doesn't help them. So I acknowledge what's happened, and then I also look to the blue sky, to the flowing waters of the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers. I feel my feet on the earth. I breathe the fresh air, and I participate in being alive. And when I was there this last Friday, we walk every Friday, I was also happily thinking about all the positive changes at Clouds and Water. And that's what we're here to talk about today. We're going to talk about four main things. Staffing changes, which if you didn't read Sangha News and were surprised by our introductions, we'll say a little more about that. The financial situation, a little financial update. And then we'll share a statement of non-harming that the board and the Ethics and Reconciliation Committee have been working on. And then we'll leave time at the end for questions. But also, if you have a burning question, you're welcome to raise your hand, not wait till the end if there's something that's, you know, you need to get an answer to or you didn't hear what we said. Please feel free to do that. And we're titling this, I think the title was Manifesting the Sangha Jewel, because the Sangha, this is how the Sangha manifests. It manifests in the staff, in the board, in the finances, and all of us together, and how we're manifesting here and now. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So we'll start by hearing some personal stories from Koji and Minna about the staffing changes.
I also wanted to say, in a moment, when Koji shares about the budget, I'm going to leave the room to print out our statement of non-harming so that I can read it to everybody.
Oh,
you do?
Oh,
okay. Never mind. So so prepared.
I'm so glad you don't have to leave.
Oh, really? Yeah. There was another reason.
Koji's going to talk about money. I'll see y'all later. I've told this story kind of a lot, there's a version of it where I'm kind of unkind to myself, and I'm going to try to not do that one. but I noticed that, I'm from this big Italian family from San Francisco, Monterey area, and I think being unkind to yourself is kind of like hilarious. And I don't experience the reaction that I expect in Minnesota when I'm being funny about being unkind to myself. I say something really morose and people are like, oh no. I applied to be the executive director when the job was posted, which is like maybe July or June of last year. And I interviewed and I was asked a series of questions about, my preparedness for it. And I had a lot of experience in administrative and leadership roles in the San Francisco Zen Center. I started a Zen Center in New Orleans, and we incorporated and fundraised and everything for that. Then I was interim teacher at the Austin Zen Center, and so I felt very, very confident, like I had a lot of experience. What I didn't anticipate was that, well, at San Francisco Zen Center, everything's really kind of set up for you. So they just kind of slide you in, tell you everything that you got to do in a day. You have kind of a checklist. There's not a lot of initiative. No one, for good or ill, no one really gets to take too much initiative at that center. About anything, really, because the wheels have been in motion for 60 years, and you can't really change is slow goings, And then in New Orleans, everything was just kind of up to me, so I wasn't really accountable to too many folks, and there wasn't much precedent, And it was really dinky, it was kind of a small organization. I think our board was 3 people, and we met annually, So ball got rolling here, it just became clear that there was a lot of things that I had to really, procedures that I had to kind of come up with on my own, Minna and I live in the same house, and Minna almost a year before me, Minna got the administrative assistant to the guiding teacher job, and I would be kind of trying to figure out what I'm doing and how to initiate things and stuff. And I would look to Minna, and Minna was, had data that they had to put onto the website by a certain date and send emails to these people. And I'm like, oh, Minna has like very clear tasks. And I'm so jealous. And then when Minna and I would talk about my job and talk about clouds, Minna had initiative and ideas and gusto, and I was just like, oh, you'd be so much better at this. So over the time, I just started noticing that dynamic of how I was kind of jealous of, I'd be looking over my shoulder and I'd be kind of jealous of what seemed straightforward and clear to me about Minna's job, and that, and that my role deserved a visionary. Someone that had the approach to the job of what can be done rather than like, well, what has to be done, So I think I have a little bit, I improved over the course of the year, but I think I might just need to admit that I have a what has to be done heart rather than a what could be done heart. And I think Minna has a what could be done heart. So we started thinking, gosh, I wonder what we could do. Could we be merge the jobs or and then we had this meeting with Sosan, and Sosan's like, well, do you think you should switch Could we? And then, so there was a bit of enthusiasm around that, and we started to believe that that was possible, and then we brought it to the board, and there seemed to be an echo of enthusiasm there. And I think it was just kind of a, you know, that I ended up with the director job, and that Minna ended up with the administrative job. It had mostly to do with timing, not to do with credentials. You know, because Minna applied for the job that was open at the time that they applied, and I applied for the job that was open at the time that I applied. And we just kind of ended up in the positions that we were. But over the course of the year, we all started to feel like we would all serve the Sangha better if we were, exchanged duties. So that was recently approved by the board. So starting actually in a couple days, September 1st, we're going to do the, Sosan started calling it in the emails, the switcheroo. So we're going to do the switcheroo on September 1st. And that's my version of it today.
Well, I'm Minna. I use they, them pronouns. I think I've met many of you, but maybe some of you I haven't. Maybe many of you over email as in my role as the administrator here. And I just want to start by saying I'm so proud to be part of a Clouds and Waters staff team. We're so small. There's five of us who are so flexible and enthusiastic to be a team that cares. We care for each other and want to make sure that we're, you know, following our passions and enthusiasms and taking care of the Clouds and Water, but also ourselves and each other. And so it feels really sustainable and wonderful to be a part of this team. And also welcome to Andrea, who's our newest member in the youth practice role. So I think Koji covered a lot of it, but I'll also add that back in 2019, when I left residential practice at San Francisco Zen Center, I came here as a student, just feeling out the Soto Zen Buddhist centers in the Twin Cities. There are many. We're really lucky here. And I came to Clouds and Water for a number of BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color retreats and events because I was so thrilled that those existed and were here and heard through the grapevine just from that involvement that Clouds and Water was in an executive director transition period in 2019. And so I actually sent emails with my feelers out before there was an official search because it made sense for my credentials and passions and also would, you know, made sense career-wise for me to move into an executive director position in a nonprofit. However, at that time, it made sense for Clouds and Water to shift Toku Scott into that position internally and not do a search. And so those feelers that I set out got pinged when the administrative assistant to the guiding teacher job came up, just because I wanted to be involved here. And I'm so glad that I have been and have gotten to know the community in this way during this time, to get to be behind the scenes, getting to know how things work and what the community needs, mostly digitally during COVID, has given me a really, really good sense of this community. And I'm also a priest candidate, if all the stars align, ordaining in November with Sosan. So I'm really committed to Clouds and Water and really proud to be a part of not just this community as a Sangha member and a priest candidate, but also as a member of this really wonderful staff team that I think is pretty unprecedented and amazing, in large part thanks to our wonderful board and Sosan. So that's my story. I'm so glad to be in this position.
Well, I also wanted to add really briefly, because I kind of talked about about why I was moving out, but not why I was moving in to the admin job. And I really, you know, another thing that I was kind of jealous of in my ED job was watching Sosan work with the programming. And that's a thing that I'm really excited about, and kind of supporting the programming and getting to be the assistant to like one of the best I've ever seen. I think Sosan's really, really good. and as a young Zen teacher, I want to like apprentice somebody that I think has like a lot of integrity, you know. So I'm excited about that as well.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just going to be really brief here because we're trying to keep to our schedule to make sure we have time to talk about everything. One thing I just want to mention is that a lot of times when change is in the air, it can be scary. So I just want to acknowledge that. We're really excited, but from the outside, it might be like, whoa, what's going on? You know, there's all this change. And, you know, even though it's like positive, like we have a new youth practice leader. So, but it's like, it's different than we're getting to know people in a different way, or getting to know people and just wondering what's going to happen. So I just want to acknowledge the fear that can come up, but kind of reiterate that I'm really excited about the direction that we're going in. And I just want to say I feel like I've been so lucky to work with Minna as my assistant for the last, almost 2 years?
Yeah.
I'll just say, I think the skills that they demonstrated in working with me is why I felt really good. Like, oh yes, of course they can be an executive director. They have really exceptional organizational skills, that wonderful sort of entrepreneurial spirit that Koji mentioned, and also experience helping organizations move toward a model of equity, which is with the direction that we're going. So this is really important in a leader, and I'm really glad that we can promote Minna, and as a person of color, to one of the top leadership positions in this organization, I think is really wonderful. And then also, just to say, Minna is an excellent teacher and soon to be priest. And being executive director doesn't prevent them from teaching and participating in that way. So when I was executive director, I was also teaching and leading things. I was a priest in training at the time, so and I look forward to Minna's continued involvement in many areas at Clouds. And also, I've thoroughly enjoyed working with Koji as a colleague in his position as executive director, and it's very clear that he's devoted to this organization and the Sangha, and his knowledge about diversity, equity, inclusion, and access have helped us move forward in the direction that we want to go. And also, as he mentioned, his ideas for programming and teaching have been really helpful to me and to the organization. And so I think I'm excited about how he can continue to bring that forward now more strongly in the role of directly assisting the guide teacher. And I'm just so glad that I get to continue to work with these two wonderful, talented people. So thank you. So now we'll hear briefly about finances from Koji, and I'll just say you'll have a chance to hear more at the annual Sangha meeting, which is at the end of next month, September 25th, so you might want to mark your calendars for that. It also was mentioned in the Sangha news, along with a bunch of other stuff, so if you didn't see this week's Sangha news, please go back and reference it. And also, just to say, we can send a copy of our current budget and the previous year's financial statements to anyone who wants it, and we can, I think we'll try to get a link to that in the next Sangha News. So, all right, thanks.
The Sangha News took me 24 hours to prepare, and it scrolls if you printed it out, it would probably be 3 feet long. So I encourage you, if you have a couple of days to spare, to read through this. And I think what I wrote about the budget in the Sangha News was really, really perfect. So it's going to be maybe better than what I'm going to say right now. There comes a time in every organization's year when they figure out what their budget's going to be for the following year. And the easiest, most straightforward way to figure out what your budget's going to be for the following year is to look at the year you just had, see how it stacked up, and then just kind of replicate it, you know? And so we looked at the year that we had, and it was a little confusing because we spent what we thought we were going to spend, we got what we thought we were going to get, more or less, but we still had this kind of red number in parentheses. And if you have ever spent time with spreadsheets, you know that red number with parentheses at the bottom is a no-no, you know? And so we're like, how did that happen? We did everything we were supposed to do, but we started off the year with a carryover from the previous year. So that means that we had a surplus going into the year, which we budgeted ourselves to kind of use up by the end of the year. So that meant that if we were to do the same fiscal year again, we'd be in a rough place. So that was, I don't know if you were here maybe 2 months ago when I kind of gave the brief alarming cryptic, like, we're not doing great, y'all, you know? So we spent some time looking at why that would have been and what we could do, and the two things you can do is, you know, increase your revenue, which is a difficult thing for a place that doesn't necessarily charge for anything, you know? And then decrease your expenses. Now, the number one expense that we have is our staffing. So we looked at everything everybody was making. We did actually, there were a couple of hourly jobs that were still in the teens for the hourly wage, so we brought those up to $20 an hour, so that there were no, you know, $17 an hour jobs at clubs. But we also had to, you know, there were some jobs that were 20 hours a week, we made that 15 or 16. There was one that was 30, we made it 24. You know, so by shaving that off, which does impact the staff, but by shaving that off, we put ourselves in a better spot. And then we also kind of did a lot of work about how we're going to communicate our cost sharing. You know, because I think in a commerce-based society, when you say pay what you can, minimum $5, that can put you, that can send the wrong message. Because it actually does cost a lot to keep everything running and to pay the teachers adequately and to, you know, I mean, even like, I'm shocked how much snow removal costs. I'm not from a snow removal part of the world. So that's an extra, you know, like hundreds of dollars a month to remove the snow, you know. So there's a lot involved in keeping the place going, and we're looking at what we've gotten in donations before COVID, and we're going to try to just, you know, through our communication with the Sangha and emphasizing that this is a Sangha-supported center, you know, and communicating more adequately what doing better cost sharing on our programming, you know, and refining our language around that. And so we got ourselves to a place where we think we can, you know, increase the support that we get from Sangha members, and then we cut down on some of our expenses with staffing, and we approved what we think is a healthy budget for the next year. Does that feel? I said I had 5 minutes. I thought, was that 5 minutes or 3 hours?
5 minutes.
Okay.
I think we're good. I'll also add that we did also shave off some other expenses, not just staff. So
yeah.
We looked, there were other places where we could save, so anywhere that we could find savings, we did, basically. And like I said, we will have a chance to talk more about the financial picture at the annual meeting. We just felt like if we didn't mention it today, you know, it would have been like one of the elephants in the room that wasn't being addressed. We want to make sure we have time to talk about this next section, which is the statement of non-harming. So I'll just say a little something about how this came about, that we have a statement, or we're rolling out a statement right now. So the Ethics and Reconciliation Committee, which previously was a grievance committee, that was the name before, it's been the Ethics and Reconciliation for quite a while, they started looking at, how about instead of just looking at reconciliation, we look at like preventing harm from happening in the first place, and also looking at the ways that harm can happen, and looking at addressing the systemic issues that play into cause of harm, like racism, for example. And the EAR committee asked the board, can we work on this? Can we start working on this? And the board said yes, and they started working on it, and then quite a while now, a joint group of some board members and the EAR committee have been working on it. Actually, I wrote down nearly a year, so it's been kind of a long time, but we wanted to be very careful about it. And right now it's been shared with the full board and with the teacher Rio, and then now we're starting to share it with the Sangha. So I think, Koji, you're going to talk a little bit more about why it's important that we have such a statement.
Yeah, So this thing comes to mind. The other day I was walking in a kind of a area there where there were some shops. I forget where I was. And there was one of those little sandwich boards, like a little tent-shaped board. And it said something like, racist people are bad, or something like that, you know? Something that I'm sure the author thought was a real wonderful, clear thing to say. And I looked at it, and I'm kind of like, that's not it, you know? And I think the big issue when we talk about race and not having... not going into it with a kind of a common understanding or some terms defined is where it gets sticky. So there are a couple of conversations about race that happened since I've been here where I just felt like I think we need to all get on the same page about what we're talking about when we're talking about systemic racism. Because when you talk about it, someone thinks that you're... it's not uncommon for people to think that you're saying something about their character or about a choice that they're making about how to feel about people, you know? And it's like, no, this isn't about a decision that you're making as an individual. This is about the smoky room that we all live in, and then when we and then our clothes start to smell of it, you know. So instead of trying to, while after people are activated by feeling accused of something and trying to explain to them what we're really talking about, or making them even feel like they need to be, you know, adults don't like actually having things explained to them, you know? So to front load some of that labor by having something that we can look at and turn over in our hearts and minds before we're in a situation where we think that anyone's saying anything about each other's personalities, because it's not really what we're getting at. You know, we're getting at being aware at and in really kind of subtle causes and conditions that harm people in our society. So with that in mind, after a couple of difficult conversations and conflicts, then... there was the idea to like, okay, what do we want to say about this as an organization? That, you know, that there's kind of like, by in being here, this is kind of the thing that we want each other to understand, you know. And then it was written. and conversed about and voted upon and things. Yeah. Does that feel like an adequate preamble?
Thank you. So Min's going to read it for us, but before they do, because sometimes even talking about these things, like maybe you feel in your body like, oh, there's some like, oh, what's going to happen? There's some agitation arising. So I want to just give us a little bit of a chance to settle our bodies so that we can hear this in the best way. So I just invite you to take a moment. And you might even, you know, start like just moving around, because we've been sitting still. So moving around, whatever that means for you, even if it's standing up or just kind of shaking out your body, kind of getting more in touch. And then maybe taking a deep breath, feeling your breath in your body. Just feeling whatever internal movement is now happening. So if you did some external movement now, just feel how the energy is moving in your body. But also feel the other things that are available to support your body, like your seat on the cushion or the chair, your feet on the floor or your legs on the cushion. You might touch the floor, touch the cushion, touch your chair. Just noticing. Here's something that's supporting me. And then if noticing your breath is stabilizing for you, you could just take a few moments of breathing, noticing your breath, while at the same time noticing your body and the support of your environment. matter what, here it is. The ground supports you. The earth supports you. The Sangha supports you. We're here together. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to read the statement, and I think Sosan already mentioned this, but we will send out a copy of it in the next Sangha News, which isn't this upcoming week, but the next. And if you'd like a copy sooner, feel free to email us at info@cloudsandwater.org, and we'll send you a copy. But for now, just allow it to be received in the way that it's received. Clouds and Water Zen Center is committed to dismantling white supremacy, racism, and other forms of oppression, both externally and internally, as a means to relieve the suffering of all beings and end cycles of trauma and abuse. We understand that whiteness has been constructed historically through the domination and subordination of Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and that white-bodied people benefit from the structures, systems, and ideologies of white supremacy and contribute to harm when they operate out of white frameworks. We recognize that white supremacy, systemic racism, and the legacies of colonialism and slavery and the ongoing genocide of Indigenous peoples have resulted in untold suffering for the majority of those in Black, Indigenous, and people of color, BIPOC, communities. We further recognize that homophobia, transphobia, ageism, classism, and other abuses of power and privilege have harmed and continue to harm many people in our community and the world. Clouds and Water values stillness, silence, and zazen, and also understands that silence can be violence. Clouds and Water seeks to create a protective container and a welcoming environment for spiritual awakening and healing to take place in the whole of its Sangha community, which includes practitioners, staff, board members, and teachers. Clouds is committed to ending ignorance around race, sexism, and other forms of oppression through conversations, restorative circles, and skill building. We're committed to learning how our own identities, histories, and social positions shape our experiences and understandings of those dynamics. We hold ourselves responsible for unpacking and undoing our complicities in upholding these legacies through explicit and internalized forms of white supremacy. Cloud seeks to create a vibrant community of engagement and inclusion. We are committed to transmitting safety and harmony to all beings so that the heart of great wisdom and compassion can be realized.
So that's what we have, and now we have time for questions and comments about this or anything that we talked about this morning.
I'd be interested in people's felt experience.
That's a good idea.
And hearing this, you know, we hear words and it goes through our head, but just the felt experience.
So if people would be willing to share, so then you don't have to share, you don't have to come up with a question or share your thoughts about what we've said, but you're just saying, like, how I'm feeling right now in my body after hearing all of this. So, yeah, if, like, 4 or 5 people would be willing to share that, I think that would help us. Can you start us, Kathleen?
Well, yeah, I was part of that committee, and it was a lot of work, a lot of conversation, and at the present moment, you know, two things. One is I feel relieved. I feel really relieved and happy that it's being offered to our community as a supportive platform for us to proceed. And in its reading, I could really hear the flow, where for me personally, it was a kind of a chopped up, you know, give and take and throw. So I could really feel the flow. And I feel still like, wow, we've really taken up a challenge that in the whole, in the bigger whole of society, there's such extraordinary continued ignorance and harm. And so it's like, wow, we are really brave. This is cool, you know, and I'm kind of excited. Yeah, excited and relieved, yeah. So thank you.
So I felt, can I take my mask off?
Yeah.
Okay. So I felt during the reading very calm and open, but the moment you asked people about to say something, I felt self-conscious. And I do have a question. I just have a question later.
All right. Let's hear the kind of felt experiences first, and then we can go to questions. Yes, Julie.
Julie Warner, I'm on the board, but I wasn't part of the writing or preparation process for the statement. But I am so happy to hear those words spoken out loud to the community, and I'm looking forward to seeing how we live into the statement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm Kate. I grew up the daughter of a Lutheran pastor in a small town that was very white. And for me, just this experience here, I mean, this is what my stepdad used to call the money sermon. And it was something he used to be very afraid about because of these people who... I mean, I think we really could have used a statement such as this in our congregation. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a stark contrast to what I grew up to, and then just kind of the acceptance, you know, like you just feel the accepting energy rather than the tension. Mm-hmm. That's what I felt.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
I'm Dabu. Tightness in my chest, my forearms are vibrating right now, tingling. I spoke with a black elder this week who told me that hope is better than optimism. And seeing Minna here right now in this, accepting this new role, and hearing the statement, those two things together make me hopeful. I'm approaching Yukai in October, and I've had some doubts recently. Mm-hmm. I'm a black Minnesotan. I'm used to white folks here. But that's not necessarily a good thing. But I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopeful. Thank you.
Yes, Roman.
Raul here. I was part of the rough journey, and it was a rough journey.
Did you mask? Yeah.
I was part of the rough journey to get this statement formed and written and shared. And it warms my heart. That clouds and water has taken this, is willing to take this journey. And I feel accepted.
Thank you for the hope.
So maybe if there's any... Oh, is there someone on Zoom? Oh,
Bushin.
Hi.
I was.
There's an echo here.
Oh, can you mute us while she's talking? That will help.
Thank you.
All the way on the left, bottom left.
Go way to the left corner of the screen. And hover. Yeah, there, the mute button is way on the left, not on the right, on the left.
That's right over. Gosh, this is so touchy. There it is. It's not letting me do it.
We need a mouse
for this. Yeah, you could do it the other way that you were trying to do.
I don't know.
All right. Well, let's give it a try.
Yeah. If we minimize the thing, then the thing won't come up.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah.
That's
right. The thing.
Okay.
No, we're.
I promise you, if you let me drive for 2 seconds, I'll fix it. We'll smallulate that, and then we can mute it.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I, like Raul, I was very involved in the formation of this statement. And I fully agree with his comment that it was very, very challenging. But we did it, and I'm very happy that the board and the teachers have accepted it. I have to honestly say that I want to feel hopeful, but I think that I really need to see how much energy and specifically what we as a community will do to actually manifest the statement. I also wanted, and so I'm feeling actually sort of nervous as I heard it read and even right now as I say this. I do want to congratulate Sosan, Koji, and Minna for having the creativity to change the administrative staff as you've chosen to. And I want to say that it was really powerful to hear Minna, a woman of color, reading the statement. So thank you for making that choice. So I will do whatever I can to support Clouds and Waters' work here. And I as I say, I want to feel hopeful, and I will not only see, but actively apply myself to making change. Thank you for listening.
So I'd like to just comment. Thank you, Pusheen. And some thought occurred to me also similarly, like these are really nice words. Now let's hope that we will manifest them. So The words are important, really important, but then like the action needs to flow. And I'll just put in a plug. This is also something that was in the Sangha News, but there's going to be a class for white-bodied folks that's going to be looking at, or not looking, practicing how we can embody anti-racism work. And Laura Levinson of Don't You Feel It Too is going to teach that. It'll start in October, and I'll be assisting her. So I really want to encourage white-bodied folks at CLAWS to sign up for that. That's just my plug.
Kato, did you have something?
I was just going to share my experience, my cult experience.
Go ahead.
And that was this kind of warmth and strength or powerful feeling in my heart area, like I sensed my heartbeat was just boom, boom, kind of saying yes to this, and so my core was very strong, and then kind of the outer parts of my body felt some tension, kind of nervousness maybe about any tensions that I imagine might arise as we try to live this into being in both white bodies and bodies of people of color. So it was a real mix, but I think the overriding feeling was just this core feeling of love, courage, responsibility, that sense really, that's what stands out for me. An appreciation that this place is doing this. It's just so needed.
Raul, did you have something else?
Yeah, I'm just wanted to, now that my emotions are kind of under control, how excited I am for this non-harming statement and excited for the switcheroo as COVID that's happening, because I think it's in the total best interest of CLAWS and Border for this to happen. I think these two individuals are perfect for where they're going to be at down the road and helping to grow CLAWS and Border. And I truly appreciate them taking these positions on and the acceptance of the non-harming statement. So thank you.
Yes, maybe this is the last one and then
we'll close. I'm Jacori. I'm very new. I've only been here a few times. But I just wanted to say I've worked at nonprofits in the Twin Cities for almost 20 years, and also being a black person in Minnesota. And I don't know what the history or harm or what made this come up, but from the outside, this is one of the most progressive and impressive kind of changes in leadership and actions I've seen in the nonprofits that I've worked on. It's clearly not ego-driven, it's clearly not tokenism, you clearly have skills, you know. And that's cool, looking from the outside coming in. And so, you know, it makes me feel like I want to be here, and I also be really interested in how you guys want to hold yourselves accountable, how you'll know this is working.
Yeah, good point, thank you. Okay, well, I think this is the last time that we can talk about this, so you can ask us questions informally. I've mentioned a couple times now the annual Sangha meeting, and for a while we were doing councils where, you know, people could just come and talk about what was up, and maybe we'll do that again. It's sort of like in the life of the Sangha, you know, we were doing it, and then after a while there weren't a lot of people attending, but maybe now would be a time for us to do that again. And actually, Fuku is going to teach a class on council practice, so which is the kind of talking circles at the end of September. So that would be another opportunity to, not as much as content, but like learning how we're reminding ourselves how we can talk to each other in a way that's helpful and non-harming. Julie, one more thing, and then we got to close.
I realize we're getting close to time. Can members of the community suggest Dharma speakers to come and give Dharma talks?
Oh, yeah.
And what would be the procedure for doing that?
I would say, I would suggest that you email my administrative assistant. I mean, you could email me too, but... Yeah, one of us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Which is just for those of you who don't know the info.
I'm going to get all the infos now.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sosan, Koji, and Mina.